church? Hell no. Are you no longer feeling comfortable in church? This podcast is for individuals who are desperately missing God, but don't know how to find Him. Substance abuse, domestic violence, sex offenses, acrimonious divorce can contribute to discomfort in the church. For these individuals, church is just not an option anymore. Ordained minister Dennis Hall and his guests invite you to listen to this podcast for topics that are inspiring, uplifting, and will bring hope to those who just feel church is not relevant in their lives today.
Hi, I'm Dennis Hall, and I am delighted that you're listening to our podcast today. And I have a special guest with us today. I have Casey Jones, who's the founder of the Florida Sea Turtle Watch. Welcome to the podcast, Casey.
Hi, sir. I'm excited to be here, and I'm glad to be invited.
Yeah, Casey's one of my new friends, and I'm delighted to have him here today. I think we're going to talk about some things that will be of interest to him and hopefully will contribute to this podcast. You know, Casey, why don't, before we get started, if you could just maybe in just a couple of sentences tell us what the mission of the Florida Sea Turtle Watch is.
That's a loaded question.
I know, just a couple of sentences. That's right.
So there was a hole, there was a gap that between the sea turtle groups, the FWC permits groups, and they mark the nests and they do the research and they GPS the nests, and they're essential to the state of Florida.
Right. So overall, it's really an organization who's about the protection of the famous sea turtles.
I'm telling you, you know, not too many people don't like sea turtles.
That's right. And we're going to get around in this podcast to talking more about the sea turtle in just a little while. Recently, Casey, my wife's gardens were featured in a garden tour on Amelia Island. And you and I both are very familiar with Nassau County and Amelia Island. And she was interviewed about her gardening, and she said this. She said, this is where I know God is real. It's a spiritual experience to see a tiny seed become a plant. Now, obviously, seeds have to germinate, to become a plant or for a garden to exist. But the question becomes, I think, well, what is it that causes a seed to germinate? I mean, what is the process that a seed goes through when it wakes up from this dormant state that it's in and all of a sudden begins to grow? You know, and it's inside of every seed, there's this embryonic little plant with all the little starchy things it needs to get started. But what happens is all of a sudden, a sprout breaks through that seed and heads into the ground, sort of south, looking for roots. Water. It's a stabilizing anchor.
That's right.
For that little seed, and then almost simultaneously,
the seed goes
up and starts looking for sun because it needs that photosynthesis to grow. And it's very interesting when you read about this whole process. We understand that process, but what we don't understand and what the scientists don't understand is what is it inside that seed that tells it to do this? What is it inside that seed to tell? You know, scientists seem to have a very poor understanding of that. And, you know, this seems to be an example, really, of one of those arguments that there must be an intelligent designer.
If you look at stuff very closely and you study it and you try to pretend like you're a scientist and you evaluate it and you look at it, and if you can deny, once you get so deep into something and do that research, and you can deny that there is a higher power, well, all we can do is pray for you.
That's right. You know, the People in seminaries would call this one of the teleological arguments for the existence of God. And what they're really saying is when you look at something, just the appearance, just the design of the plant, just to watch what's happening when a seed germinates, suggest that, yes, there's some intelligent designer that we would call God. And it's not just some random evolutionary coincidence that plant seeds have this ability to germinate. You know, we have, we don't have time to talk about this story this morning, but I have talked about it on the podcast before, where we've had biologists successfully germinate seeds more than 2,000 years old that they found in a jar in an excavation site. So it's just amazing. And then that causes us to, I think, stand back and ask those questions that we ask a lot, and that is the whole universe itself, you know, this place where we live, this earth and this big universe that we live in, how in the world? And of course, as a believer in God, I know who the creator was, but how did it come about, this big universe? And scientists tell us that there are over 20 what they would call constants. Well, what do we mean by that? Stuff like gravity, you know, stuff like electromagnetic fields, stuff like the speed of light. These things, these constants were created when the universe was created, and they're unchangeable. We can measure them. We can do all those kinds of things. But if the scientists tell us if any of those things were changed, just a small fraction, life couldn't exist.
That's right. And I want to get back to when we talk about it later, but that magnetic field that you were just talking about, that has something to do with sea turtles.
Well, we're gonna get a chance to talk about our friends the sea turtles in just a minute. You know, someone described this whole thing, this creation of the universe and these constants, as a big safe, and on that safe there are millions of digits on that dial, and the code to unlock the safe is also millions of digits. Amazing. And so the likelihood that someone could come up there and unlock that safe is just not even reasonable. I mean, it's not even comprehensible. And so it's kind of the description of the universe, and we have to have all of these things in place. And we refer to this as fine-tuning. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of atheists who've come to believe in God just over that issue, and that is, how can things be so fine-tuned that the only way this could happen in this earth created to support life is by all of these things being aligned.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, you know, one of the things I think about is something I learned as a kid. You did too. You did, and almost every one of us. You know, if we see a ball rolling across the lawn, we know that something caused that.
That's right.
Somebody pushed it, kicked it, started it. In other words, we call this cause and effect.
That's right.
You know, didn't this happen? And that's the same thing we look at with the universe. It didn't just happen.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about you, Casey, but sometimes I think about these things and think about all the things that we see around us here on this earth and the things that go on. And we have to get back to those things and say, boy, you know, if these things didn't exist, we wouldn't be here. I mean, we just wouldn't be here. You know, they tell us that these constants, you know, and the nuclear forces on Earth, if it just changed slightly, there we wouldn't have things like hydrogen, which we have to have for life, or if, things...
take away the bees.
Yeah.
Just take the bees away.
Yeah, that's right.
See what happens.
That's right. Exactly.
We'll starve.
Yeah, that's all this fine tuning. Everything is complementary to each other to make it possible for life to exist. You know, they tell us if if the gravity, we just take gravity, for instance, if I shove a bottle of water off this desk right now, it's going to fall to the floor because of the forces of gravity.
Right.
And if the gravity on Earth was just changed just slightly, I mean, our entire galaxy, the whole universe would be completely off. I mean, stars would burn out and things would go away. Nearby planets would go away. Just something as simple as that. And, you know, if you look at just the precise purpose of everything on this Earth and the planning that went into the creation of these laws when the Earth itself was created is just unbelievable. And it tells us, yeah, I like to go out on the beach. You'd like that because I like to walk my dog on the beach. And, you know, in the mornings when I'm walking on that beach, I just think when I see that sun come up every day.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. It's an absolute, you know, in the old days, the old theologians used to refer to that as a sensus divinitatis, which means simply the sense of the divine. And every once in a while, I'll meet somebody on the beach who's taking photographs of the sunrise. I love to
ask
them. Yeah, see, I love to ask them, why are you taking pictures of sunrise? And, you know, they'll say usually something like, well, it's just so beautiful. And then I get to say to them, well, do you know why it's so beautiful? And sometimes they'll look at me a little funny and say, well, I'm not sure why it's so beautiful. And then that's what I tell them. It's a sensus divinitatis. In other words, it's telling you when that sun comes up that there's something bigger than we are.
Well, let me tell you, I post that and I get that all the time. And I say, we live in Florida. It's hard for anybody to live in Florida and not live less than an hour from the beach. And most people sleep it away. They're getting ready for work or they're driving to work and they want to rest on the weekend because it's the only time they can sleep in.
Sure.
Man, get your butt up and get to the freaking beach because guess what? It's one of God's greatest gifts to men and most people don't go. And you know why it's one of God's greatest gifts? You know why?
Why?
Because there's some people in this world and in this country and in this great state of ours, Florida, that didn't get a chance to wake up like we did.
Right.
And didn't get to see that sunrise.
You know, we're not going to talk about this on today's podcast, but maybe a future one with everything going on in the world. I mean, we're sitting here right now and, you know, we've got this situation over there with Israel and Iran and missiles being fired back and forth. And then over here in this country, we got people in the streets supporting Palestine and Hamas and all these groups. And honestly, my reaction is we've got a lot of godless people who don't understand the reality of God. And so they are out doing things they shouldn't be doing.
I know we're just touching on that today, but I watched it this morning. I think it was, I try to watch the other news and I try to sit there and bear it, but they actually interviewed a not straight guy. I don't know what we're supposed to call him, the political correct thing. And he doesn't understand that if he goes over there in the Middle East, they'll kill him.
Right.
They'll kill him right there in the street. And he's supporting terrorists.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. Yes. How twisted as the college is making these college kids that they brainwashed somebody that don't have the freedom that they have in this country to stick up for somebody that if they were in that country, they'd kill them.
That's exactly right. You know,
and they do it in public and do it in front of cameras because the cops wouldn't.
All right.
The cops wouldn't come get them.
You know, back to our discussion, scientists, they don't even make an argument about the fact that that biological life did not always exist on Earth. I mean, nobody even argues that question. The question is whether there was some kind of accidental coming together of matter or whether there was an intelligent designer, God, who played a role in the creation of life. That seems to be the debate that's gone on for literally centuries. And, the laws of the universe, like we've been discussing, you know, they're not necessary for, I mean, they are necessary for life to exist, but they don't cause, they did not cause life to come in to exist. If you follow what I'm saying, you know, the scientists, I mean, recently, in recent years, you know, we've completely mapped the DNA of the human being. And this has led a lot of scientists around the world, just that fact, to look at the whole DNA of the human being and say, this had to be done by an intelligent designer. It could not have just happened on his own. And then we get down and we have scientists who've, you know, looked at the basic structure of cells, the smallest little thing that we can study a cell. And they found that it's like a factory in there. There's all of these finely coordinated mechanisms that are working together to do what that cell needs to do. And you say, well how does the cell know what to do? Mm-hmm. Well, it gets back to that DNA. The DNA tells it what to do. So you know, it's just fascinating to see what scientists, it just seems like science over and over again tells us that, you know, what we would refer to as the creation story is the only logical thing that you could come up with. You know, even when we go study the fossils and, you know, when we begin to first see certain animals and certain layers of the earth and the fossils, well, this explains exactly why all of a sudden a new animal appears in our fossil history, and that is because there was somebody in charge of designing the DNA for that animal. And so that brings me to the topic of the sea turtle.
Yes, sir. I can talk about that.
Well, I know you can, but I just want you to sort of tell our listeners the miraculous story of the sea turtle and think about the fact that that sea turtle and its uniqueness was created by this intelligent designer that we know as God.
Right. First, I want to back up for your previous question and earlier in the broadcast. And so there was a gap between the sea turtle groups, their license and permitted through FWC. It's kind of serious. And
right.
And FWC is pretty strict on who joins and who runs it and everything. But they wanted them to primary mark the nests, GPS the nests. Some beaches, not all, they take the first egg at the top. Well, why do they do that? That could be an egg that survived. Remember, they say only 1 in 1,000 live to adulthood.
So that's what I've heard.
Every 1,000 eggs, not every 1,000 eggs, because remember what I was about to touch, they get in there and they take, well, why do they do that? Well, the very top of the eggs, some of them, most of them, you know, 5 or 10 of them, let's say the female came and she laid 130, maybe 120, but maybe the last 5 or 10 didn't get fertilized. So you remember those eggs are all the way up in there.
Right.
You know where the male's at.
Right.
So he fertilized, you know, 95% of the eggs. So the last few that she drops in there didn't get fertilized. So right. when the sea turtles take that egg and they send it to the, Northeast Florida, it gets sent to the University of Florida.
Right.
And they do a DNA test and they know exactly which female that was.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? Most people don't know that.
Yeah.
They don't broadcast that
when, right,
you know, the people that come up say, oh, that's a sea turtle nest.
Yeah.
So my group, so FWC doesn't like them to get political. Now, why is that? And that's where the gap was. That's where the hole was. And that's why my organization, Florida Sea Turtle Watch, has filled that gap.
Right.
I'm not scared of politics.
Right.
You know, as you can tell, we met at a restaurant a few days ago, and so we kind of hit it off, and that's why I'm here.
Right.
And so I joke, because when I go to these meetings, these board meetings, which is the county meetings, the city council meetings, different counties, different cities are called different things.
Yeah.
And when I go, I still wear my flip flops and I should be dressed like you, dress pants, dress shirt. I should, but I jokingly say, I don't get my flip flop sandy when I go there. I get them muddy because politics is muddy.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to the sea turtle.
Yes, sir.
The
yes,
sea
sir.
Turtle is a unique animal.
That's right.
In the sea that we all are amazed when we see one out at sea. But these turtles have to come to the beaches.
So you got to remember. Can you imagine coming to the beach and seeing a dolphin crawling on top of the dunes like the sea turtles do? Right. They have flippers. They have flippers. Yeah. Well, guess what? A lot of them are 300, 400, 500 pounds. You know, the loggerhead and the green sea turtle, they're roughly around 300 to 500 pounds.
500-pound turtle.
You imagine? And they have flippers just like dolphins. Yeah. And they have to crawl. They try to crawl up to the high tide mark or close to the dunes. It depends on what kind of beach you have. So imagine somebody not having feet like us or like a land turtle, and they have flippers, and they have to pull. She picks herself up, and she moves herself 6, 8, 10, 12 inches, and then she goes down, and then she does it again. So like I said, imagine a dolphin being on top of a dune with flippers. So then she gets up there, and most of them nest at night. Not all the time. You see the videos, you know, there's a certain turtle that nest that don't really nest that much in Florida. It's one of the most endangered. But we mainly have in Northeast Florida, which is our area that we're in, is loggerhead and then a little bit of green and then green sea turtle. And then every now and then a leatherback will come. They're the biggest. Yeah. They're almost like dinosaur size, almost. They can be up to 1,000 to 2,000 pounds.
Wow.
No joke. Leatherback is the biggest. But they could be, you know, four or five wide and 5-6 feet long. But you got to remember when she nests with her back flippers, and if she turned her head, she can't see through her shell. So they dig that deep 18, almost 2 feet tunnel. It's a perfect tube. And then imagine an upside down mushroom. So she does this perfect tube, and then it spoons out into a mushroom.
Wow.
And she does that with her feet, back flippers. She can't see what she's doing. It's all by feel. And you got to remember, her flippers are swimming. So they're like this, right?
Yeah.
And they do like this. Well, somehow she reaches in the back and turns her flipper the other way and makes like a mitt-shaped shovel. And she pulls that, she reaches down deep and she turns her flipper the wrong way and makes like a shovel and pulls it out and throws that down. Now you tell me that would just happen with the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Well, certainly, you know, if we said, could this happen just through natural selection, some kind of evolutionary process, or is it like the little seed that we talked about that somehow God and that turtle's DNA programmed that turtle to do these miraculous things on a beach?
So not only is it programmed for her to do that, but there's a reason why they say don't help the turtles down the beach. Don't pick up the baby turtles when they hatch and don't carry them. Do you know why?
No, why?
The scientists say this is what they come up with. Remember about the magnets
right.
talking about earlier?
Yeah.
If a female walks, now she's a inch or two long and an inch or two inch wide, right? They're like this big, barely. Well, they crawl to the beach and they're so tiny and they get to the water. The sea turtle people, FWC, they encourage them to walk that way because the best thing they can come up with is they can feel the magnets in there. And guess what? If it's a female baby sea turtle, guess what? She comes back to the beach that she was born on within a certain mile radius. Somehow she knows what beach she was born in, and she might swim 1,000 miles out in the Atlantic Ocean. She might swim all the way around the state of Florida and go to the Gulf of Mexico for some vacation time. But somehow she'll come back around the state of Florida, yeah, all the way up to back to the Northeast, and she'll lay her nest, because that's where God called her back, or that's where the magnets.
And the scientists think this is related to the Earth's electromagnetic fields.
Correct. Right. That's the only thing that it can come up with.
Well, see, and even there again, as we were talking earlier, I mean, if there was just a slight change in those constants, mm-hmm, that were created when the Earth was created, all kinds of life would not exist,
man,
including the sea turtle.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just that little bit.
The sea turtle to me is just such a great example of the things that we're talking about when we talk about fine tuning and intelligent design and so forth. It's just a great example. You know, so many people over the years, since the days that Darwin wrote his works about evolution, have this notion that somehow human beings evolved from apes, that we're just descendants for apes. And there's so many different obvious differences between a primate like an ape than human beings. You know, we walk upright. We have sort of hairless bodies. We wear clothes.
Some more than others.
Yeah. And right. That's true. And then, we have this ability to use fire and technology and all these things that we just take for granted. But, you know, there's this other facet of just us, the human beings, where, we compose music, we write poetry, and we practice religion. We do all of these kinds of things, and you say, how could that have ever happened from some kind of evolutionary process? You know, we know the difference between right and wrong and good and evil, and all of these things. We know the difference between improper conduct and proper conduct. And these things just don't happen. And, our moral abilities as humans, it can't be explained by some kind of natural process or evolutionary process. Almost seems like we humans have a higher purpose. We have a higher purpose.
That's right.
Than all the other animals that exist on Earth. And, we go about our lives in a ways that it's not just about reproduction and survival and so forth. We do all of these things from every kind of art you can think of to building cathedrals and on and on and on. It can't be explained. The thing that kind of grabs me about us, about me and you and all the other human beings, is we have this capacity to love. Now, I have a dog at home. I've had him for 13 years, and I love that little dog. I mean, I really do love him, and that dog would do anything it could do to make me happy. But it's a different kind of affection. It's almost like an animal bonding,
yep,
that occurs. It's not like the love that goes on between two human beings.
That's right.
Or even our ability to love things that are not even human.
I always said about dogs and any animal, cat and dog, and, you know, in America, we that's pretty serious. You see how many millions of dollars that homeowners spend, or anybody, a family spends on a dog. And why did God only let them be in our life for 12 to 16 years?
Right.
Why is that? Right. Why is that? Can you answer that? Why do we only have them for a short period of time?
I don't know, but I mean, I've owned a lot of dogs in my lifetime. I'm old enough to say that. And I will say this. I've always considered an animal like that or a cat. I know lots of people have their cats and love their cats as much as I love my dog. But I consider them almost a gift from God.
They are. And this is the way I look at it. We only have them a short period of time. Most dogs or cats is dogs, I think, are 12 to 16.
Sure.
You know, nobody's guaranteed you could lose them at 10. You know?
Right, right.
But why did God knew how much we were going to love a cat or a dog, right?
Right.
So, but death is a part of life.
Right.
And so why did he give us, I think it was to prepare for us losing our mom or dad or brother or sister or aunt or uncle or even hopefully not, because you always want to live longer than your children. But so why did God put animals in a short period of time? Because he's trying to prepare us for death, because death is part of life.
Well, I think that's a good hypothesis. You know, with everything, you and I would say, you know, God has a reason for everything. And it may very well be the case that we have these short lives. I live in a neighborhood where there are lots of dog owners, and I meet them out in the mornings and the evening walking their dogs when I'm walking my dog. And it's obvious the affection that occurs there. And when somebody loses a dog in the neighborhood, everybody seems to know about it. And they'll say, "Oh, Sam lost his dog this week, and he's really in a
pray for him."
Yeah,
Like they lost a kid, because they are our kid.
Exactly.
We feed them and take care of them and house them.
Yeah.
And love them.
But you know, the human capacity for love is just beyond comprehension. I mean, on, you know, news stories, occasionally we see people going into a burning automobile that's been in a wreck, or rescue somebody they don't even know, put their lives at risk, climb in a burning vehicle to pull somebody they don't even know out.
And it happens every day.
I know.
And the firemen and the policemen and the total stranger that don't even have protection burning. They do it every day.
Yeah. And
human nature.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just amazing. If there's anything about creation that's fascinating to me, it's the human being's ability to love. And, we sometimes hear and read about, a soldier who's thrown himself on a live grenade to sacrifice his life to save his buddy's lives. And so, you know, it's this kind of love that separates the human being and the human being God's children that he has created. Now, you know, Casey's, we wind this podcast sort of down. First of all, I want to say to you, thank you so much for being here today and talking about the miraculous story of the sea turtle. And perhaps we can have you back again in the future. But as I close this, I kind of want to, John 15:13, out of the scripture, we read, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." Now, what other animal on the face of the earth, would do that? There are animals we know about. I think of geese right now. Geese mate for life. And I've been goose hunting and shot a goose, see it fall, and then watch that goose's mate come and circle us.
Grieve.
But what you don't see, is a goose making a decision to get in the way and sacrifice its life
That's right.
For another, because we don't see that in the animal world. And, you know, it's because of this capacity to love that God has created in each of us. You know, I haven't known you for very long. You said that earlier in the podcast.
That's right.
But, you know, I would immediately say, I got a new friend. His name's Casey. And I love Casey. You know, I love Casey. See, that's the way humans interact. And it's because of this ability, this capacity to love, that we can understand John 3:16 when God has told us, for God so loved the world that he gave us his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life.
That's right.
Casey, thank you so much for being here with me today. I hope to have you back in the near future.
Let me say, not only do I do the politics, but what I do in the politics, it covers the light, light pollution. We don't want any light pollution. You know, speaking about the geese, and I'll make it real quick because I know we got to go. Why did the Canadian geese quit migrating to Canada, right? It's because about that time, it might have been a coincidence, but the scientists think when they created that super bright white LED light, that's when they, around that time, a lot of birds quit migrating. Now, could that be a coincidence?
Yeah.
So that's what my group does. I do light pollution on the beach. We want them to switch them back to not the old sodium lights, the amber, right? We want them to switch them back to LED amber.
Right.
Because that's a natural light.
Right.
That super bright light is dangerous. And right. I'll leave it at that.
Well, it's good to have you here today. Explain to us about the dangers that affect the life of the sea turtle, as well as the miraculous story of the sea turtle. And we'll have you back again, Casey. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.